This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne with Steve Inskeep. No matter how much we've worried about our safety since 9/11, one expert says we're not worried enough. Stephen Flynn, author of The Edge of Disaster, has been making his case this week on Morning Edition.
What seems unique about the era we're living in is that when we have a disaster like Katrina, we go back to sort of business as usual. We let people build just where they were building before. We pretend that this was just something that is a rare event instead of an almost certain event over a period of time.
Stephen Flynn says the U.S. isn't prepared for the next 9/11 or Hurricane Katrina. So Steve Inskeep spoke with one of the people making plans for that next disaster.
His name is George Forsman. He's a senior official in charge of preparedness at the Department of Homeland Security, and he's come to our studios. Welcome to the program.
Steve, thanks for having me.
You've heard Stephen Flynn's evaluation of the situation and of preparedness for various disasters over the last several days. You've got your own, and I want to see how they compare. And let's start with a scenario that Flynn talked about on Tuesday. He warned about a disruption from a terrorist attack or an earthquake at the port of Los Angeles.
There are only about 5 to 7 days of refined fuels in the entire West Coast economy. That is the gas that's in people's gas tanks or in the filling stations. So if you disrupt the harbor and the oil tankers don't come in, you literally run out of gas.
The Department of Homeland Security has been battling to establish priorities for what are the targets at highest risk. Where do seaports fall?
Well, when we talk about ports, we don't rank those above one other sector. We rank those in addition to other sectors. We have to look at the nation as a whole. We have to manage risk nationally. And that requires us to understand that each of the individual parts form the sum total of what is a national risk environment.
But seaports are up there. They're on the list.
Absolutely. You know, clearly from listening to Steve and others, we've got to do a better job of talking to America about the progress that we have made, because we have in place plans that describe what we need to do to be able to restore a port to full operation if we do have to shut it out.
Well, let me look at one aspect of that. What do you do if it's Long Beach, Los Angeles? You have millions of those container cargoes going through and one of them blows up and someone decides you need to check every single one and figure out every single one that's coming in from overseas. How quickly would you get a handle on that problem?
Well, I think we would get a handle on it very quickly. And when you start looking at the containers, do we have the capability to do a level of inspection? Absolutely, we do.
A level of inspection, meaning some percentage of them would get inspected.
Or we could choose to do 100% of them. But part of what we have to understand is the American people are living in a different environment in the post-9/11 era. And we have to recognize that there are going to be, from time to time, inconveniences associated with managing risk in America. But the goal of the federal government, working with state and local government, with the private sector, is to minimize those inconveniences.
You're saying if you live in California, to take Steve Flynn's example, you should just be ready for the possibility that you might suddenly be cut off from your gasoline supply for some period of time until a port can be started up again.
Well, I think what I would offer is that we live with risk every day, and California has a rich experience of dealing with earthquakes. And frankly, whether you're talking about California and earthquakes, the Midwest and tornadoes, or the East Coast and hurricanes, we've all lived with an element of risk.
Well, let's stay in California and stay with earthquakes, which you mentioned, because one of the other examples brought up this week involves the river systems around Sacramento, California, and the levees which protect the land in that area, which are made of peat soil and sand. And one possibility is you have an earthquake, the levees collapse, and you have salt water getting into a river basin that supplies much of California's water.
You basically have to shut down the fresh water supply for the seventh largest economy in the world, which is what California is.
Suddenly you have a situation like New Orleans, only it sounds much more far-reaching in its consequences.
We've had teams on the ground working with California officials to look at the contingencies if you were, in fact, going to have a problem, whether it's created by a simple structure failure or whether it's the result of an earthquake. What are the steps that you would need to take in terms of being able to mitigate the factors as a result of it?
If you do have the worst-case scenario there, does the federal government or someone have a plan to provide drinking water to 30 million people?
Well, I think it's not just simply the federal government. And the real question is, do we have a national approach which allows us to deal with the potable water issues for 30 million people? And the simple answer is yes. But at the end of the day, is it going to be implementable overnight? And the answer is no. When you look at what we do to add resiliency into the system, you have to think about it as a continuum. Has the average citizen taken the steps that they need to take to manage their risk on a day-to-day basis, to be prepared to deal with a natural disaster or a terrorist event, all the way up to is the private sector ensuring that lending and insurance policies all promote good risk management principles. And what I would tell you is after having been in this business for a quarter of a century, we are light years ahead of today where we were 10 years ago in terms of this nation and how we manage risk.
Here's another issue where the author Stephen Flynn would argue that more community involvement is needed, and it has to do with medical care after some kind of a large-scale disaster. He points out what might happen if there were millions of people in the United States stricken with pandemic flu.
Our medical care system would be called upon to try to cope with that surge, but it's barely staying afloat, managing the day-to-day demands being placed on it. I think anybody who's had to go to a hospital recently knows that they were in a long wait.
Is this accurate to say that as the hospital system in the United States has become more efficient, they've got fewer and fewer beds relative to the number of patients, and therefore you just have fewer beds and fewer of everything in an emergency?
Well, I think part of it is we've got to change the paradigm about how we think about medical care. And part of this recognizes that there is going to be a certain percentage of a population in any event that requires very definitive hospital type of care. But we also have to understand that particularly in a broad, large-scale event like a pandemic or a biological attack on America, that the standard of reasonable care that we're going to expect for people is going to differ based on what your symptoms are. And in fact, the whole idea that we're going to put an entire population inside of a hospital facility as we currently understand hospital facilities is probably not likely. So what we're looking at in terms of the medical environment out there is how do we ensure a level of surge capacity? How do you ensure that core hospital facility is capable of operating?
You mentioned that some large proportion of the population won't need hospital care, and the key will be, I suppose, to make sure that they understand that. If there is a biological attack, which is one of the possibilities you mentioned, everybody's going to want to be in the hospital.
Well, I think that the two things that we have to get through, and I won't say that everyone won't need care. Everyone will need some level of care.
Well, the point is everybody's going to want it, whether they need it or not.
Absolutely. And I think that part of what this underscores is that in the context of the risk environment that we live in today, we're going to have to understand that there are going to be different standard of care in that catastrophic scenario than one might reasonably expect. Look, if you have a fire at your home tonight, you're going to expect that three or four fire trucks show up. If there's a major disaster going on here in the National Capital Region, you're going to be happy if you get one fire truck.
There seems to be a bit of a theme in a number of remarks you've made in this conversation where you seem to be encouraging people to lower their expectations a little bit, to essentially acknowledge that if a disaster happens, the government will do what it can. There may be some successes, but a lot of people are going to get hurt.
Well, and I think that's the nature of a disaster. We don't have warehouses full of material within an hour of every community just waiting to respond to a disaster. The American public have to manage their expectations because a disaster is just that. It's an unexpected event. And part of the solution to resiliency in the 21st century is to make sure not only is the private sector or government ready, but are the citizens ready.
And just to put a point on this, you're saying that part of the solution to resiliency is to acknowledge you're not all that resilient.
That's right. I mean, you know, unless there is a dramatic change in the way people feel, people are not going to be willing to pay for a whole bunch of assets to sit at the ready every moment of every day. And frankly, we would spend ourselves into oblivion. That's not how you manage risk. The biggest perception that we've got to get by is that we're going to eliminate risk in the 21st century. We're not going to do that.
George Forsman of the Department of Homeland Security, thanks very much.
Steve, thank you.
You can hear our earlier conversations about what it means to be on the edge of disaster at npr.org.